Scripture that I'm going to be sharing out of today in this early service is from the book of Acts. There you got it. This is when Paul was on his transportation towards Rome. And they got into heavy winds. Janie and I have been through that at various times. 60 mile an hour is whipping wind. So Paul was worried about the people who were there trying to manage the ship. And he was looking for the kind of deliverance that is very graphic. It's not a figurative speech, it's real. In the morning, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned to run the ship ashore if they could. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea. At the same time, they loosened the ropes that tied the steering oars. Then, hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But, striking a reef, they ran the ship aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the force of the waves. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners so that none might swim away and escape. But the centurion, he would have been the one in charge, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land, and the rest to follow, some on planks and others on pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. So ends our reading for the morning. This service, at least. Wrong stack. Here we go. Most of the time in the 50 years I've been in ministry, I tend not to spend a lot of time on Old Testament lessons, rather focusing on New Testament lessons. And truth be told, an awful lot of the time was in the Gospels. And of those, the parables were a go-to thing for me over the 50 years. But there's a story that goes on through the book of Acts that is kind of along the theme of the day and yet is New Testament based. The whole thing of deliverance. The 10 o'clock service, we'll be talking about Moses and playing a part in the series that Weatherly started a couple of weeks ago and will finish next week. And the whole notion of deliverance plays across both this service and the later one. And what do you think of when you think of deliverance? Any of you? What's the word that comes to your mind?
Freedom.
Freedom. Yes. Anybody else? I was listening to the story of an attempt to assassinate Lincoln before he was even inaugurated. And later on in that book, it talked about 3 million people were emancipated in the writing of that pen on the Emancipation Proclamation. Probably the most graphic deliverance that we have ever had on the North American continent. But at the same time, there are those very graphic and clear kinds of moments of deliverance. What Paul was dealing with trying to go through this incarceration that later then we hear about in the book of Acts, he had people ministering to him all the time because the jailers didn't feed you. So if you're going to be alive, somebody, not a prisoner, needed to be there to support you in this situation. So there are a lot of dynamics of the book of Acts that talk about deliverance. But sometimes, not as graphic as emancipation, not even as graphic as a friend bringing you food, there's also some of those very unseen and not very obvious deliverances, the kind of thing where people extend themselves in ways that then makes your heart different. So this is a jewel that we'll talk about telephones. Now, some of you are almost my age. How many of you remember when a telephone was usually just inside the entry door, and it was wood, and there was this black thing on this side that you put up against your ear, and there was a speaker, you know, a thing that came out, and you'd talk into that? How many of you remember those? Couple, three, okay. Did you have to crank too? Okay. I grew up on a party line, 16 people on a party line. But the whole thing of that small town interplay over the phone in those days, if you got in trouble, that phone would be able to give you all kinds of support and care. So this story that I glommed onto is free of my Aunt Anna, who used to rubberneck on all those phone calls that happened on the south side of my town. This is back in a situation where, when this author was young, the family had their first telephone in the neighborhood. He goes on to say, I remember the polished old wooden case fastened to the wall, the shiny receiver hung on the side of the box. I was too little to reach it, but I could listen with fascination when my mother talked into it. The author says, then I discovered that somewhere inside that wonderful device lived an amazing person. Her name was Information, Please. And there was nothing she did not know. Information, please, could you supply someone's number and the correct time? Boom, you know, they'd do it. The author's personal experience with the genie in the bottle came when my mother was visiting a neighbor. Amusing myself at the tool bench in the basement, I whacked my finger with a hammer. The pain was terrible, but there seemed no point in crying because there was no home to give sympathy. I walked around the house, sucking my throbbing thumb, and finally arriving at the stairway. Then I went to the telephone. Quickly, I ran to the footstool and dragged it into the landing, and then I climbed up and unhooked the receiver and held it to my ear. Information, please. A click or two and a small, clear voice spoke into my ear. Information. I hurt my finger, I wailed into the phone, the tears coming readily now that I had an audience. Have you got any little kids and they have alternative ways of hurting with you listening or not with you listening? So she says, I hurt my finger, and the question comes back from the information lady, isn't your mother home? Nobody's home but me, I blubbered. Are you bleeding? The voice asked. No, I replied, I hit my finger with a hammer and it hurts. Can you open the ice box? She asked. I said I could. Then chip off a little bit of ice and hold it on your finger. After that, I called Information, Please, for everything. I asked her to help with my geography, and she told me where Philadelphia is. She helped me with my math. She told me the chipmunk I had caught in the park would eat fruit and nuts. Then there was the time Petey, our pet canary, died. I called Information, Please, and told her the sad story. She listened and said the things grown-ups say to soothe a child, but I was inconsolable. I asked her, why is it birds sing so beautifully and bring so much joy only to end up a heap of feathers on the bottom of the cage? She must have sensed a deep sadness, for she quietly said, Wayne, always remember that there are other worlds to sing in. Somehow, I felt better. Another day, I was on the telephone. Information, please. Information, the now familiar voice said, how can I spell fix? All this took place in a small town in the Pacific Northwest. When I was 9, we moved to Boston. I missed my friend very much. Information, please, lived in that old wooden box back home, and I somehow never thought to try the shiny new phone that sat on the table in the hall. As I grew into my teens, the memories of those childhood conversations never really left me. Often in moments of doubt and perplexity, I would recall the serene sense of security and deliverance that she gave me. I appreciated how patient, understanding, and kind she was to spend the time, that kind of time, with a little boy. A few years later, on my way west to college, my plane laid over in Seattle. I had about a half hour between planes. I spent 50 minutes or so on the phone with my sister who lived there. Then, without thinking, I dialed my hometown operator. You could still do that in those days. And said, "Information, please." Miraculously, I heard the small, clear voice I knew so well. "Information." I hadn't planned this, but I heard myself say, "Could you please tell me how to spell fix?" There was a long pause. Then came the quiet answer, "I guess your finger must have healed by now." "So it's really you," I said. "I wonder if you have any idea how much you meant to me during that time." "I wonder," she said, "if you know how much your calls meant to me. I never had any children and used to look forward to your calls." I told her how often I had thought of her over the years and asked if I could call her again when I came back to visit my sister. "Please do. Just ask for Sally." 3 months later, I was back in Seattle. A different voice answered "Information." I asked for Sally. "Are you a friend?" the voice asked. "Yes, a very old friend." "I'm sorry to have to tell you this," she said. "Sally has been working part-time the last few years because she was sick, and she died 5 weeks ago." Before I could hang up, she said, "Wait a minute. Did you say your name was Wayne?" "Yes," I answered. "Well, Sally left a message for you. She wrote it down in case you called. Let me read it to you." The note says, "Tell him there are other worlds to sing in. He'll know what I mean." I thanked her and hung up. I knew what Sally meant. And you can be a deliverer. Never underestimate how much you mean to people around in your life. You can be the deliverer rather than the overbearing Pharaoh.